Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
I used the Complete Idiot's Guide to the Bible.
Unqualified.
Why can't my kids come into the service? Because we have PG-13 services.
Unqualified.
That has a nice ring to it. Unqualified. I've always felt that way.
It wasn't a compliment.
Junior church has taken over. It's designed for elementary kids or junior higher.
Who doesn't feel unqualified?
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go.
The thrill of victory. And the agony of defeat.
It wasn't meant as a compliment.
It's never good when you have to explain that.
Or another example would be if somebody calls you dangerous, it's not a compliment. Just saying. This is Wretched Radio, spanning the globe. Why? Because you send stuff from all over the place. It's always a joy. You can send things to idea@wretched.org. idea@wretched.org. I'm sorry. I'm just basking in the glow of hitting my post. Sorry. Let's get to it. Show just doesn't happen very often. So when it does, it's kind of a big deal. Let's go to Denmark, shall we? You might want to bring a checkbook because while the tax is there, they aren't kidding around. Nevertheless, they're going to become the next European country to ban veils. Not as in, was it Tony Vail? Who is that? Wasn't there a singer?
That was me, thanks.
No, it was. That's
Vicky
Tony
Vail?
No.
Jerry Vail. It was
Jerry
Tony Vail. Vail. Was my,
that's who that's Jerry Vail
that
is.
That was me.
Who? What did Jerry Vail sing? Come on. Come on. If you know this.
Oh, boy. Do
I
you?
Hope you're picking out your casket. No, I don't know who Jerry Vail is, but I'm not as old as you. Denmark to become
no
the next European country to ban veils after minister declares them incompatible with our values. Well, whatever the motive, here it is. It is incompatible with the values in Danish society and disrespectful to the community to keep one's face hidden when meeting each other in public spaces. That's from Justice Minister Søren Pape Poulsen. Does everybody have three names there? With a ban on covering the face, we are drawing a line in the sand and underlining that in Denmark we show each other trust and respect by meeting face to face. Okay. I would approach it a little bit differently, but that's just me. That's because I don't think that it's a religion that is compatible with Western values. Not that Denmark has many of those left, but the point is it's simply not compatible. Yes, I know. We're a country of immigrants. I get that. But there's something called common sense that if somebody, based on their religion, is sworn to, you know, kill you, I'm sorry. This just doesn't seem
God,
that complex to
me. How many years ago did common sense die?
If I'm not mistaken, we sent flowers because we couldn't make it to the funeral. Yeah. We were so busy.
How busy were we?
We had just come back from the funeral of Courtesy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how many of these funerals can you attend in one season? Courtesy died. Common sense went down with it. Polite. Values.
Chivalry.
That was,
all
we gone. should have made it to Morality's funeral because that was a, that's a big one. Sweden has legalized child. I still wish that I could find that. We did a bid on that. Today we mourn the loss of common sense. Many were in attendance at its funeral. It was a very funny bit. I can never find that thing. And that had to have been 15 years ago. It was cute back then. Now we're seeing the rubber meet the road. I'm telling you, we are in it. We are in it. When you read through history books and you see a lot of years pass, a lot of things are not commented on. It tends to be the big highlight stuff. We're in one. And I know that your grandparents said the same thing. There's something different about this. I know that during the Roaring Twenties, people said, "Uh-oh, look out! This is a very bad thing for our culture with Charleston flappers and razzmatazz. This is not good." And they were right. In the 50s, when they warned us about the rock and roll, we look back and we go, "Wasn't that cute that they thought that the rock and roll had to go?" They were right. They were just right. What it brought with it, untold sin. I I know what that makes me sound like. I'm just trying to observe from the rearview mirror here. Movies, the loss of standards. When did we dump those? Was that the 60s and 70s? We decided
about the same time morality was buried. Yeah,
pretty much. Okay, those were big changes. But this is now J curve. We are really ramping it up. All values gone. We'll write them as we go. We'll make them up. This feels to me, this is different than the 60s. There were racial issues in the 60s, to be certain. This feels different this time around because this is connected to a really bad worldview. This is connected to postmodernism, a neo-fascism. It has some substance to it. Now, it's a bad substance, but it has some substance to it, and it's different. And what will the people do when the foundations crumble? That's what we're seeing. We're not just seeing bad fruit. We're getting down to the root, and we're seeing now that the Christian root has been replaced by a rotten root, and we're seeing its rotten fruit. Sweden has legalized child marriages for Islamic refugees who come from countries where Sharia was the law of the land. Wow! You got the Denmark no veils here, Jerry or otherwise, in Sweden. Despite clearly contradicting Swedish law. Was it really?
Bellari was, no.
Huh. Whoa. Volari. Hey, come, Bari. Whoa.
Yeah.
Come ride Volari today. That was the commercial. Ride
that was
small.
The commercial.
The comfortable way. Haven't heard that in, 30 years?
And with any luck.
Stuck right there. I was wrong about the shampoo. I used to think it was Prel that would say, and you'll tell a friend, and they'll tell a friend.
See, I told you it wasn't Prel.
It wasn't Prel. It was some honey nut. It was an organic Fabergé organic shampoo. I had to look it up.
They make great eggs.
I don't think they make Fabergé. I don't think they're making those anymore either. It was Fabergé, because organic, that was back in the 70s. Talk about ahead of its time. And I don't think they make it anymore because apparently their friends weren't telling their friends and so on and so on. In Sweden, despite the fact that it contradicts Swedish law, underage immigrant wives have been repeatedly allowed to stay with their husbands, which defend their decisions by citing humanitarian issues. See, that's bad. There it is. That's just foundationally bad thinking is what that is. You get the wrong starting point. It's the law of the angle, something like that. Off a little bit. Woo! By the time you get down the line, you're in big trouble. Blaine Adamson, might want to pray for him, owns a T-shirt company called Hands On Originals. He refused to print T-shirts for a gay pride festival because of his Christian beliefs. Guess what? He's in hot water. Thought some details of this story were kind of interesting. He's being sued, of course. For all the years that I've been running my business, Hands On Originals, I've happily served and employed people of all backgrounds, of all walks of life. I have gay customers and employ gay people. That won't do, sir. For example, we printed materials for a local band called Mother Jane, whose lead singer is a lesbian. That was never a problem for us because we'll work with anyone, but we can't print all messages. You will get in line with what the state says, Mr. Adamson. Small business has printed orders for organizations like the Gospel Coalition. Used to be about the gospel a lot over there. He wrote in the Daily Signal that he was declined other orders, such as a simple black shirt with white text that read, homosexuality is a sin. He wouldn't print that either because he didn't think that was something that he felt good about. Without some sort of context, I'm not sure it's wise either. Nevertheless, I don't think that's how Jesus would have handled the issue. Jesus would have balanced grace and truth. You can't print a full appropriate message on all subjects on a T-shirt. Some people try. He said, no, I'm not going to do that one. In other words, he's demonstrated. He said no before. It does not matter. You will get in line with the new morality, which they are writing as they go, which is why somebody was writing an article. They're calling it now Christian shaming. Have you heard about this? Where they're doing it with Tony Dungy, Tim Tebow, of course, Mike Pence, and then where they shame you for being a Christian. I thought that was called bullying, and we weren't supposed to be doing that. Well, yes, we're not supposed to, but when it comes to this, we can, because we're writing the morality code as we go here, and we recognize some inconsistencies, but give us a break. We secular humanists are creating this on the fly, so don't expect to see complete harmony. That's a fact. That is just a fact. And I expect that we're going to see more and more Christian shaming. Why? Because we are the ones that are ultimately the ones that will continue to make them feel bad. This is all about suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. When I watched the movie over this last weekend, the Genesis movie, is Genesis history. It's just so undeniable that God made the place. When you look at DNA, wow, the complexity and what it required. It's undeniable. And yet they deny the most obvious thing that there is, that there is a creator. Why? So that they can suppress the truth in unrighteousness. That is why they suppress what is. It's like me, and believe me, for me, this is like a big deal. I don't have a nose on the. What do you mean I've got a nose on the front of my face? There's no nose. Hold on, I've got to blow this. I don't have a nose. What are you talking? Why? So that they can live any way they want to. Welcome to Post-Christian America. This is Wretched Radio.
It's time for a drive-by minute.
We're sent by Christ, and we're sent to a specific people. Within the DNA of the New Testament church is that idea that we are sent, that we are a people on mission, that we are missionaries within a local context, that missionaries are not just people we send way over there, but we are missionaries wherever God has placed us, that we are God's people in a specific location to fulfill the purpose God has given us. The church is who we are, not just something we do. We gather as a church on Sundays, but we do that in order to scatter as the church the rest of the week and to be about the mission of making disciples. And the one who empowers us as we scatter, the one who showers us with gifts for God's mission, is none other than the Holy Spirit himself.
You can get Drive-By Pneumatology and all of our Drive-By resources at wretched.org. Perhaps you don't share your faith because you fear getting tongue-tied, or you fear you won't know the answer to someone's question. Good news, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Take the Big Toe Challenge. Purchase 12 or 52 copies of our new evangelistic booklet, Don't Stub Your Toe, and simply leave a copy on the table when you leave the restaurant, or give it to the drive-thru attendant. It is just that easy. Take the Big Toe Challenge at wretched.org.
Sorry for the math, but these numbers are important. Did you know that it costs $28 to provide a free ultrasound to a woman who is thinking about taking the life of her own child? Did you also know that 80% of the time a woman sees an ultrasound, she keeps her child? That is some math we need to remember, because wretched people have provided enough support for preborn that thousands of babies have already been saved, thanks to you. How would you like to grow those numbers? It's $28 for an ultrasound. 80% of the time, a woman chooses life. What say we make that number tens of thousands this year? Please consider supporting preborn at preborn.org, preborn.org/wretched.
You don't need to page all the way to the book of Matthew to find Jesus in the Bible. Our Savior appears in the very first book of Genesis and in every other book in the Old Testament, if you know where to find him. The Jesus Unmasked Sunday School curriculum will show your class where and how to find Jesus in the Old Testament. They'll see for themselves that the Bible is about one story only, Jesus Christ. The Jesus Unmasked Sunday School curriculum, available at wretched.org.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is the ability to discern between true and false spirits. Satan masquerades as an angel of light, and many false teachers present their lies as God's truth. But God has given us his truth, and he has equipped us to tell true from false in accordance with his word. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Happy? Are you? Are you happy now? Borderline this is idiot. Wretched Radio. You forced us to order 20,000 more copies of Don't Stub Your Toe. I hope you're pleased with yourself, because we sure are. I don't mind telling you. Well done. So many people taking the big toe challenge. That's right, because how beautiful are the feet that bring the good news. You can leave a copy of Don't Stub Your Toe, hand it to somebody, send it in the mail, give it to the folks who come and work on your house, if you're not as handy as I'm not, and you will be participating in the Great Commission. And I can't tell you're doing it. People are taking us up on the challenge, whether it's 12, which is one a month with somebody, 52, one per week. Some people have even ordered 365, kind of an odd number. I don't know why they ordered that many, but nevertheless, because they want to be giving away the gospel in a nice, it's current, it looks professional, it's not geeky, it is a thorough gospel presentation that is also, I think, respectful of them. It is not a Turner Burns sort of affair. It does explain hell. It does explain eternal conscious torment, but it makes it reasonable. So thank you to everybody who's participating in that. 20,000 more are on the way. You can get your copies at wretched.org. Wretched.org. Take the Big Toe Challenge. Speaking of presenting the gospel and truth in a way that is in love, over the weekend, once again watched Is Genesis History. A group of us gathered in the basement, and we watched Is Genesis History. And one of the people in the group said, you know what I really appreciated about that? He wasn't, like, mad at people on the other side. He wasn't taking shots at evolutionists or people who are old earthers. He just presented it. It was thoughtful. He said, I just found that really compelling. Bingo! Speaking the truth in love. Don't stub your toe at wretched.org. And a subject that I am very pleased to talk about, even though I'm not pleased with the subject matter. Thanks to that good old Genesis 3 fall into a sin, we see the effects of the curse everywhere. And we see it, I think, mostly, if this is possible, affecting our brain. It's the noetic effect of the fall, that our brains, they do not work the way that they should. And because there is so much bad stuff in the world, that too affects our brains. It's the issue of trauma. I don't like this subject because it's a reminder of sin, and so many people have been hurt and wounded in different venues by different people in different ways. But I'm also very glad that the Bible actually has the answer and healing for people who have been traumatized, whether it's in war or elsewhere. Psychology Today, that's right. Psychology Today, they can observe all they want. We don't take their cue when it comes to how do we fix a problem, but we can let them observe. Let them spend the money on the polling. Come on, Lifeway can only do so much polling, people. Let's let the pagans do some. The invisible wounds of soldiers. According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, there are nearly 20 million living veterans, 16.5 million of whom are veterans of combat deployments. Not that there's any less gratitude for people who didn't see combat, but 16.5 million did. And many of those are grappling with guilt, shame, resentment, disorientation about what I did, what I'm supposed to be doing, why am I on this planet? They question their moral principles, their relationship with God, their sense of self as a relational partner, parent, community member. How can I be a part of this with what I've done? Invisible wounds can last a lifetime post-deployment. This is a big issue, a betrayal of moral principles. It's called moral injury. I was commanded to do something that goes against my grain of what I've learned is right and wrong. And now they've got to live with that. It is a type of trauma. So what do, according to Psychology Today, many of these vets turn to? Substances such as alcohol and drugs. Others engage in compulsive behaviors such as sex, gambling, internet gaming, overeating. They are trying to soothe themselves somehow. And then along comes an article from RickThomas.net, Daniel Berger II. Now, this is not a holistic presentation on post-traumatic stress. Please note, we do not call it post-traumatic stress disorder. Why? Because of what you are going to hear from this article titled, Post-Traumatic Stress is Not a Disorder. I went to a conference on this 6-8 weeks ago. That was exactly the title of it. The poster was Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, and the word disorder had a big X through it. It's not a disorder to feel disoriented, confused, guilty, filled with shame when you've been traumatized, whether it's military, whether it was sexual, whether it was physical, emotional abuse. Plenty of that, isn't there? You shouldn't have any sort of response. That would be a disorder. You don't have any response to anything that's ever happened to you. That would be more troubling. Because the human body is not meant to take that. This is from Daniel Berger at RickThomas.net. The DSM label of post-traumatic stress disorder says it's a disease. Not according to the Bible. The premise, which views post-traumatic stress as a disorder, rests on the false belief that people are normally capable of enduring severe trauma or stress without lasting, deep, and impairing mental and behavioral struggles. May I just tell you, if you're struggling with a traumatic event from your past and you're wondering what's the matter with me, the answer is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have an issue that needs to be worked through. But you're not weird. You're not flaky. You're not weak. You're not built. That's not how we were made. It's because of the fall. First of all, our brains don't work the way that they should to begin with. Second of all, the wicked things that we're exposed to. We're not meant to take that. That's not the way that the designer made us. So you're not weird. Don't feel strange. Viktor Frankl, who was a Holocaust survivor, said this: an abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation is normal behavior. An abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation, that's normal. So let's just change that. If you've got a normal reaction to an abnormal situation, that's abnormal. It's okay, Saint. It's okay. The construct of PTSD highlights the sharp contrast between humanistic and biblical anthropologies. Good biblical counseling starts with a high view of God and a good, robust understanding of us, who we are as people. And if you don't have... secular psychology says God doesn't exist. There's a problem. Man is spanky. You're terrific. Rise. You're wonderful. You can do anything. You just put your mind to it and dream your dream and you can accomplish it. Okay, I know that sounds a lot like many sermons that come out of Houston these days, but that's not biblical. A lot of Christian books written like that. That's not biblical. Bible says we're broken. We're busted. Things aren't working right. We're not meant to take this. Humanists see people as normally strong, able to survive. The Bible says, no, we're very fragile. We're very depraved. The American Psychiatric Association asserts PTSD in their construct of it, that post-traumatic stress is a medical abnormality. It's not the way the Bible presents it. So who do you think is going to come up with a better solution? If you've been traumatized, find a biblical counselor. There's healing. You're not weird. And by the way, no biblical counselor is going to go, what? You're thinking like that? No. Because the Bible tells us so. It is not the individual's reaction or struggle with a traumatic life event that is itself a disorder. Rather, it is the horrific experience that is disordered. This reality takes the starting point of proper faith back to Genesis 3. And unless you start there, ongoing distress and pain are not going to make any sense. Insisting that soldiers who have endured unbelievable things that they've done, that they've seen, that they participated in, that they've even heard about, the threat of being killed, that's not stressful. What does your heart do after you almost got into a crash? Bang, 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 bang. Hey, that's not normal. You shouldn't be having an increased heart rate. What's the matter with you? So would say the secularist, not the Christian. We'd go, that's normal. Of course you should be freaked out by that. Having seen and smelled things God never intended to be experienced. That's not realistic, or is it helpful? The remedy to PTS does not come in denying the past, suppressing memories, diminishing awareness, psychotropic drugs. It's to change one's faith in according with God's truth, which explains the broken world, why we're feeling the way that we are, how we look to the future, how we put it into correct categories, and how we can be healed by the great physician. Run from a secular psychiatrist or even a Christian counselor. If you've been traumatized, you're normal. You're fine. Just go see a biblical counselor and let them heal you with the word. It works. This is Wretched Radio.
Important dates in Christian history. 1095. Pope Urban II launches the First Crusade to reclaim Jerusalem from Muslim control. The crowd wildly shouts, "God wills it." There would be several crusades over the next centuries, with many tragic results and consequences lasting for centuries. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
That wasn't very good, Friel.
So you're 1-1 so far today.
Do I have any marketable skills? I think we've answered that question. This is Wretched Radio. Do you recognize that tune? Hint. You like Tom Hulce more than the real Mozart.
So this is from Amadeus?
That was more than a hint, yeah. This is actually from Mozart, yes. I don't know what Amadeus has to do with this. This
Amadeus
is Mozart.
Is the movie.
Whatever. This would be your
Requiem?
That's right, in D minor. That's right. I don't know. I think some of the stuff that Christians are cranking out these days is pretty good. Yeah, that was pretty much a cheap shot. Prepare to die. That is an encouragement for Christians. Not that we are the morbid people, but we should be the people who face death without fear. We face death well, and we die well. But the only way to do that is to think about it, and here's the bonus. You start thinking about your funeral now, you'll live better today. Have you noticed as you've gotten older, and I don't care how old you are, have you just noticed how time waits for no man? It just marches and marches and marches. You're looking forward to that thing, that weekend event. You want to go see that movie. You've got a vacation planned, and it feels like it's never going to come, but it does, and you do it, and then it's done. And time is always doing that, and the next thing you know, you and I are going to be dead. Unless Jesus returns, you and I are going to stop breathing. We are going to have a death bed, even if it's the ground. We will have a place where we finally stop living. And by the way, this debate about when we stop living, I'll tell you, it's one that we really should be on the forefront of. Is it brainwaves? Is it heartbeat? Is it sentience? What is it? When is somebody alive and when is somebody dead? It is all a part of the beginning of life, end of life issues that if we do not have it resolved, they're going to keep moving the marker. They're going to start killing babies earlier and earlier, later and later, which they already do. And they're going to start taking the lives of old people younger and younger. We read the story, I believe, last week. Was that in Denmark, I think? Where the person actually had different forms of mental illness. Like schizophrenia, bipolar, wanted to kill herself. So the government said, okay, we'll help. Wow. Defining life, muy important. Defining death, mega important. Is it brainwaves? Got to be careful with that one, because if the body is functioning, we are not our brains. Now, I grant you that we can't function well without our brains, but a heart that is still beating, blood that is flowing, oxygen that is getting to body parts to keep you alive, you're not your brain. Your brain is the mechanism, the organ that God uses. I like to think of it as the connector between spiritual, your soul, and the physical world. But you're not your brain. You're not your heart. You're not how big you are. You're who you are because of who you are. Because God may cut off an arm, you're still you. You're no less you. Why? Who are you? You're a soul. You're a spiritual being with a body. You're both. It's a duality. I'm not a trichotomist, but it's both. Body important, soul more important. We need to have these terms defined. By the way, speaking of the life issue, thank you to everybody who is sponsoring preborn.org. If you're not sponsoring preborn.org, would you please consider $28 a month at least? That buys an ultrasound for somebody so that they don't take the life of their baby. They see the ultrasound and they go, that's a baby. Preborn.org. This from GC Discipleship. Start planning your funeral. Oh, I suppose we should. Hold on. I got you covered.
Back to Requiem. Nicely done.
Thank you. Psalm 90, verse 12. Teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. Go to the house of mourning. That would be your Ecclesiasticus 7:2. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart. Here's a question. Is it better to go to a funeral or to go to a wedding celebration? Well, I mean, ultimately, it's funner. That's right, I said funner. Funner to go to a wedding celebration, but you learn more at a funeral. That's why it's better in that sense. You got to define what the word better is. The house of the mourning is the end of all mankind. You may or may not be getting married, but you go and die. And when you recognize that fact, it will determine how you spend your days. Funerals are better than weddings because it helps you attain wisdom. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. Now, that doesn't mean that you should never have a good time, that there should never be a party, but you don't learn stuff there. You learn a lot when you think about your death. Thinking about the brevity of life is the key to finding wisdom. Remember, it starts with the fear of the Lord. Go to parties, receptions after somebody's funeral, but maybe we should be lingering at the graveside a bit longer and pondering that. Isn't that funny how quickly when somebody dies, how mourning turns to laughter so fast, doesn't it? People just get in their cars, they drive away, they take off the tie, away they go. Oh, these shoes were killing me. Off they go, and you just get back to your life pretty fast, don't you? Maybe we would do well to ponder death a little bit longer. We become wiser. Heard a great sermon on the subject of wisdom. Again, we're camping right now on James 3, 13 through 18. That heavenly wisdom is so radically different than earthly wisdom. Earthly wisdom is demonic. Earthly wisdom ends in contentions and fights. That's why I think this study is so important for those of us who are conservative. We just build up oodles of knowledge, but if it's not applied, and if it doesn't have peaceable fruit of righteousness, of gentleness, if it isn't pure, then it's demonic. If you're storing up wisdom for the sake of just being wise, look out. That's going to be you. Hold on. This is worth reading. Well, it's not that everything in the Bible isn't worth reading, but my point is, if you find yourself with a lot of wisdom, but you find yourself looking back and just seeing a bunch of bodies laying in your wake, you don't have heavenly wisdom. A heavenly wisdom, one of the marks of a heavenly wisdom, by the way, such a good sermon, one of the marks of heavenly wisdom is that when somebody brings you new information, you're willing to say, oh, I didn't know that. I was not the essentials, but circumstances, issues, even secondary or tertiary theology, you need to be willing to say, I was wrong about that, and not just simply be a Fox News talk show host. Here's James chapter 3, 13 through 18. Who is wise? Let him show it by his good conducts and his work his works done in the meekness. That's the internal. I'm positionally meek. I'm not gentle of heart. I'm meek inside of my heart. It produces gentleness in the way that I talk. For where envy, self-seeking exists, confusion, and every evil thing, that would be your earthly wisdom. You fight a lot. You're contentious. You just break relationships, anger every place. That's that. You might be theologically smart, but you're not biblically wise. It defines what it is. But the wisdom from above is first pure. So that's the inward desire to be in a right position. I want to make sure that I'm doing it. I want to be obedient. I want to love my God more. So internally, then, like that's the seed, and then here comes the plant. Peaceable, gentle, willing to yield. Oh, I didn't know that. I was wrong. I'm changing course. Full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Hear the word peace? It's used three times in those two verses. Peace, peace, peace. If your wisdom is leading to chaos, fighting, conflict, you don't have heavenly wisdom. You've got an earthly wisdom. You want some heavenly wisdom? Spend some more time at a gravesite. Spend some more time thinking about your death. Think about your mortality. David wrote, O Lord, make me know my end, and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. Start planning your funeral. Jonathan Edwards' ninth resolution, resolve to think much on all occasions of my dying and the common circumstances which attend to death. So try this. 10 minutes a day, think through the reality that you're going to die. Reflect on what that means to you, from death certificates, future plans, coffin choices. And then ask, what would I do differently? What would I start doing? What would I stop doing? Would I keep living the way that I am? Where I live? Doing the things that I do? Working the job that I have? Would I be ashamed of not attempting for God? Who should I spend more time with? What am I ashamed of doing? How am I treating people? If it's been contentious, conflict-ridden, think about your death. It'll change your wisdom from earthly to heavenly. Start planning your funeral now. This is Wretched Radio.
What do altercations, arguments, bickering, disagreements, disputes, and fights have in common? They are all inevitable, and they are also avoidable. Conflict is our newest Wretched resource, designed to give you the tools and skills you need to fight biblically. That's right. Conflict will teach you how to fight biblically, which will make all of your other fights go away. If you're weary from the battles in your home, conflict. To purchase your copy, go to wretched.org.
So recently, I was cleaning out some drawers in my desk. It happens on occasion. And I stumbled across an old letter that I had received from a Tomorrow Club that Mrs. Friel and I support in Ukraine. It said this: there was a church in Ozera Village, but it collapsed for some reason in 2000. The Tomorrow Club started there in 2006 after the English camp. Elyona Bondarenko was the one who repented through this Tomorrow Club. She grew up, and today she is running this club, bringing the gospel to other children. Most of the Tomorrow Club children are ages from 7 to 10, and most of them are from problem families. There's also a group of non-Christian teenagers who come to the Tomorrow Club. Please pray that they trust their lives to God. How would you like to receive a letter like that? You can support your own Tomorrow Club. Simply visit tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
The debates Christians find themselves in these days are littered with landmines. Transgenderism, LGBTQ issues, freedom of speech, abortion, postmodernism, marriage. Expository Apologetics with Dr. Vody Bauckham will lead you through these landmines. You'll learn how to turn every morality debate into a witness encounter. Culture has changed. The Word of God has not. Let Vody Bauckham equip you to wield the sword of the Word, not to win arguments, but to win souls. To purchase your copy, go to wretched.org.
Know your church fathers. Gregory of Nazianzus
was the Bishop of Constantinople in the 4th century. He wrote important works on the Trinity and the person of Christ. Gregory described the relationship between the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and taught that Jesus is fully God and fully man. His arguments are still in use today. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And you thought I forgot. This is Wretched Radio. Unless, of course, you forgot to remember that I was supposed to remember to not forget to share with you a sermon that, believe it or not, I listened to twice. This is how forgetful we human beings are. I listened to a sermon from Phil Johnson. I told you about it. I went, oh, I just heard this sermon from Phil Johnson. Oh, it's really good. It's about worldliness. It's 1 John, worldliness, that we're not supposed to be like the world. It's really good. I'll play that for you sometime. That was several weeks ago because I forgot. But then it dawned on me, you know what? I've actually heard this sermon before. I listened to an entire 60-minute sermon twice. Because so much of it just goes flying out of your noggin. And that is why we need to constantly be in the Word, constantly reminding ourselves of the basic truths. This sermon from Phil Johnson, it is excellent. It just doesn't get any better. And yet I forgot so much of it. Because that's the way our brains work. Little sieves, they just out they go. And that's a shame because I'll tell you something. We need this reminder to not be worldly. This would change the way a lot of churches operate. Maybe it'll change the way your church runs or maybe the way you run you.
There are Christians, including some Christian leaders, who I would say are sinfully obsessed with the whims and entertainments of this world. Chasing the latest fad is their favorite pastime, and they seem to think we can harness worldly likes and dislikes, and we can harness those things as an evangelistic strategy. And so they work hard to adopt all the badges of worldly style and the key elements of worldly wisdom. You know, they immerse themselves in worldly entertainments. They crave popularity and worldly approval. They may try to convince you, even, that a neck tattoo of a Bible verse or a religious symbol is really more effective than a real testimony. You should get your neck tattooed. That's a great testimony. That is the lowbrow form of evangelical worldliness.
But wait, there's also a highbrow. Some of this might just sting a little bit.
There is a highbrow flavor as well. And those are the evangelical elitists who are driven by an unhealthy craving for academic renown. They become desperate, so desperate to win scholarly approval, street cred among the academics, that they end up apostatizing in the process.
Be careful. Wisdom puffs up. If you're seeking wisdom for the sake of wisdom, careful. You're simply on a dangerous path, and it's also a form of worldliness. Why do you want that title? Why do you want that degree? Is it so the world will think that you're now qualified? Is it so that the church will think, oh, you must know what you're talking about? I keep thinking back to John Street from Masters University. He heads up the biblical counseling program. If more men went to seminary to learn how to be holy and not simply just to learn stuff, that would change what is going on in the pulpits all over this country. And it's true, isn't it? James 3, 13 through 18, the wisdom of this world, it typically ends with all kinds of consternation, conflict, because it's simply designed to be a one-upsmanship as opposed to bearing fruit of peaceableness and righteousness. Be careful while you're learning so much about the Lord.
And closely related to that brand of worldliness is the current evangelical preoccupation with celebrity status, a yearning for fame and popularity, a craving to be noticed by other people, like the Pharisees, of whom Jesus said, they do all their deeds to be seen by others. Only, unlike the Pharisees, today's evangelical fame seekers don't necessarily even try to make any show of public piety. They're just hungry for the world's applause. And the world today is not typically impressed by religion. And so people do other things to be noticed by the world. And they think they're doing Christ a favor by calling attention to themselves because they're Christians.
Ow. Hold on. Phil is not done stepping on toes yet. How else can we be worldly inside of the church? Brace yourself.
And then there are those who seem to think that we can save the world if we could just win enough elections. They throw themselves into politics and learn the art of compromise, and then they barter away their convictions or their testimony in exchange for some political advantage. Perhaps nothing is more worldly than the idea that Caesar's authority might be harnessed by the church and put to good use. Very few Christians are able to devote themselves to politics and maintain an uncompromising commitment to Christ. Because after all, the most pressing priority for any politician is to win votes in the next election. And so worldliness thrives among evangelicals who are sold out political activists because they want the world's votes, if not their approval.
Those are the ways that we can be worldly. Would you like to know why I didn't realize that I already heard this sermon? Why I was so forgetful of it?
Why?
I was outlining it. I was outlining Phil's sermon. I was. How does he structure this? How is he putting this together? And in my effort to figure out how a great preacher organizes a sermon, I had forgotten the warning, the stern warnings of what worldliness is. I don't like this message because I'm prone to be worldly. We're all prone to be worldly. We're surrounded by the world, and we need to remember what it is and why it is so wicked.
Three reasons why worldliness is a sin of the very worst order. Number one, it's an act of spiritual adultery. The church is the bride of Christ, and so Christians who are unfaithful to Christ are comparable to an unfaithful wife, an adulteress. So he's writing to people who have let their own worldly desires govern what they pray for, so that even their prayers are unfaithful. And let's face this honestly, we all deserve this rebuke to one degree or another.
And then he goes on to use an example of somebody who's an adulteress and is called an adulteress. Did he use a Hollywood celebrity? No, he did not. Did he use a story from a tabloid? Mm-mm, church scandal? No. Who was called an adulteress in the Bible? How's about the children of Israel? You adulterous nation. You adulterous people. I've done everything for you, and look at how you've gone off a whoring. You adulterous people. And that is what we are when we become worldly. Now remember, not everything in the world is worldly. But everything in the world can be used in a worldly way, and it's the world system, the way of thinking, the way of acting, the priorities, the behaviors, the morality, the outward appearance. God doesn't like it when we are not chasing after Him, but we're chasing after worldly things. We are adulterers. But wait, it keeps getting worse.
It's an expression of blatant hostility. Specifically, to love the world is to be hostile to God. You cannot be friends with God and make friends with the world at the same time. And that should be obvious to any believer. James says his readers ought to have been fully aware of this principle. Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? How could you not know that, he says. Worldliness is nothing more than an expression of contempt for what God loves.
And James is even more smacky than 1 John is. Don't you know that friendliness with the world is hostility? You side with the world, you're siding against your God. The third reason we need to remember worldliness is bad.
Worldliness is a sin of the very worst order because it is a crime of diabolical treachery. Look at the last phrase of our verse. Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Worldliness is a deliberate act of treason against God. If you're a Christian, you won't become a friend of this world by accident. The world doesn't make friends with Christians. Christians have to make friends with the world. And in order to do that, the world requires some degree of disloyalty to Christ. You know, if you refuse to betray Christ, you cannot be a friend of this world that hates him. And we owe Christ our full and uncompromising loyalty.
There is a reason, perhaps, that you are not being persecuted for your faith. You just don't bump into many people. You don't have many interactions with human beings on the planet. So, in other words, it could be because you live in Montana. Short of that, you should be getting persecuted in some way, shape, or form. That's the moral to this story. That if you are never being treated poorly because you're a Christian, it's because you're making friends with the world. You're siding with the world. You're being too quiet. You're being too passive. You're not speaking up. You're not evangelizing. Is that true of you? I can't be the judge of that. I can just judge myself. Would encourage you to do the same. Are you being worldly? Until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Thank you much for joining us today. Always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day with us at Wretched Radio. And if I may, thank you. Thank you to those who support Wretched and allow us to do all the things we do here on the radio, on the internet, the TV. None of that would happen without your generous support. Thank you. And if you would like to partner with Wretched, details on how you can give a tax-deductible gift or become one of our monthly gospel partners at wretched.org/donate. And also a hearty thank you for those taking part in the Big Toe Challenge. You've done it again. You've sent us back to the printers to print up more copies of Don't Stub Your Toe, a thorough and urgent explanation of the gospel. The Big Toe Challenge, where you take Don't Stub Your Toe and share the gospel by handing out the booklet or just giving it away or leaving it in places. Go to wretched.org, special pricing on 12 and 50 count packs of Don't Stub Your Toe. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.